Welcome to the Kevin Hilly Podcast, just a sample of what he does each morning on 101.9 The Wave. Now, here's Kevin.
Well, I can't tell you what a thrill it is this morning to have the coach, Gary Pinkel. And people call you coach. That's pretty much your name, right, coach?
Coach. Yeah, everybody knows my name. So it's I meet a bazillion people. I don't know all their names all the time. You meet somebody once, everybody expects you to remember it. But yeah, you know what? I take great pride in that. I think the rest of my life I'll be called coach. And
that's all right.
And the reason is because one of the greatest things about my job is I see it now. I went back to Seattle. They did an unveiling of Don James' statue there. Mm-hmm. And I saw a bunch of players at Washington that I was coaching around then 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And this bond and relationship you have with them, you haven't seen him for 30 years. And I'm being honest with you.
Right.
I went back to Toledo. I've certainly been back to Mizzou. Talk to players. I get texts from players and everything else. One of the greatest things is that, you know, you're a coach and you've had an opportunity to have an influence on these kids' lives. And it's just certainly a great blessing.
We're going to talk about that this morning. Former Mizzou coach Gary Pinkel, he was 118-73 in 15 seasons at Mizzou. What a record. He won the most games as a coach at Missouri and also at Toledo, where he went 73-37-3 in 10 seasons before he joined the Tigers in 2001. Gary's going to be doing a book signing tomorrow at Stonecrest Books in Osage Beach, 5:30 till 7. It's the 100-yard journey. Let me ask you first off, Gary, what led you to write a book?
Well, if people know me, I just didn't wake up one morning, hey, Missy, I'm writing my book today.
I'm writing a book.
Yeah, I mean, that's not me. That's not me. In fact, I got several people right after I retired. They asked me, I thought a little bit tongue-in-cheek maybe, but said, you're going to write a book? And I said, you know, looking at it like, are you kidding me? No. And then all of a sudden, I got some writers, and I got some publishers call me, and then my attorney got involved and handles my contracts. And then all of a sudden, we have a deal made with Triumph Books out of Chicago, and then it was finding the right person to do it with, and I got Dave Matter to help me.
I've always wondered about the process of somebody who is not an author writing a book. Does he sit there with a tape recorder and listen to what you're saying and then say, okay, maybe we can say it in the book like this? How does that work?
Well, how it really worked for us is, you know, a lot of people use the term ghostwriter or co-writer or what have you. First of all, I had to select somebody. I had several people I could choose from. I know Dave for years ago. I mean, working the school newspaper 15 years ago, and he's kind of moved away to Columbia, then, you know, to the Post-Dispatch and in St. Louis.
Sure.
And he's very well respected. He knows me very, very well. And so what we did is we sat down in November, right about now, we were finishing a lot of our organization because we wanted it very organized from chapter to chapter to chapter. Then we set up dates, and we generally met about once a week for about two and a half hours. And we would have what our goal was and what we needed. You know, like the first one is about Akron, Ohio, where I grew up. And kind of then that brings in my family and, you know, all the things that kind of is about my life there. But we also had that very detailed, and then he would just talk to me. And we would record it, like you said. But he also did research in Google on that, on all these areas beforehand.
Okay.
So we got into the football season when I was head coach at Toledo, for example. He brought in the first 4 years, my records that I had.
So he
was things like this. So he was on top of it.
He wasn't talking to you unknowing of these things.
No, he was very, very well informed. Plus, he knows a lot about me anyway.
Right, right.
And it was great. He did a phenomenal job. You know, first of all, putting up with me, number one. That requires enough patience. But he had to go back then and then put the headset on and get his computer and type this thing out first person. I mean,
that's gotta
are
be
you
tough.
Kidding me?
Yeah, I know.
I said, yeah, how'd you do that? He said it was tough initially because he had never done it before. But he learned to kind of go on his own.
Right.
He said, I had to come to kind of be you. And I said, that must have been scary.
And you're talking a book here. Okay. I told Gary when he came in this morning, I said, honestly, I've got so much stuff here in front of me that I need to edit it down to some sort of radio-friendly time limit. I don't know how an author does something like that for a book, just to be able to put it all in one
place. And he did a good job. And, you know, Missy, my wife, who's the publisher of
L Profile, yeah.
She did a great job because we asked her to help edit it.
Mm-hmm.
And she gained another perspective.
You got
a coach. Yeah, I mean, she's very good at what she does. But it was a different perspective than him being a guy who covers sports, me being a football coach. And this is maybe just the average reader out there that isn't a sports enthusiast.
Mm-hmm.
But really, how does a whole book flow and things like that? And I thought she did a phenomenal job.
We were all shocked when we heard the news, cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Mm-hmm. The good news is you're in remission now,
mm-hmm.
But let me ask you first, how are you feeling these days?
I'm feeling fine. It is in remission. I don't know how long it's going to be. It could be 6 more months. It could be 6 more years. I don't know.
Remission isn't cured.
Yeah, see, my type of lymphoma, there are 99 types of lymphoma, believe it or not. And my type of lymphoma, it's non-Hodgkin's, but mm-hmm. there's all different types of that. It will not leave your body. It's there. It might be in remission, but it'll be there forever. That's what it is. And that's a little bit why I had to make a decision, because this happened to me right after we won two back-to-back championships in 13 and 14, and played the championship games. And right here, then I did this. I got treatment. They responded well, my body, to the treatment called rituximab. I did that up at Mayo, and all this time, just for listeners out there, I'm sitting there saying, am I doing the right thing? I'm working 85 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea I have no idea when I'm going to start getting treatment again. I have no idea. I mean, am I spending the right time? I got, newly married. I got, two kids there. I have my 8 kids, my 8 grandkids.
You got a whole life going on.
My 3 kids, right. Yeah. Am I using my time right? And I just got to the point that, I just felt, number one, it's de-stress your life.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody told me the best thing you do for cancer is to de-stress your life. Well, it is a pretty stressful job.
He saw
Barry Odom the first 4 or 5 games of the year as he's learned to battle through all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then it was the right thing to do for me and my family.
What was it like hearing the word cancer? I know we talk about people who are battling it and everything, but did you face and wrestle with the real possibility that I'm not going to be around soon?
Yeah, it's kind of stunning. I remember driving around, and other people who have cancer who I've talked to before did the same thing. So you're driving away, or you're driving around the next day, and you're going to start treatment in 2 weeks, and you're driving around, you're looking in the rearview mirror at a red light, and you're looking and looking, saying, I got cancer?
Mm.
Are you kidding me? And so it's numbing. Plus, a person that's always been so health conscious, which I always have, because I have a brother and sister that have a disease called hereditary spastic paraplegia. They lost their ability to walk when they were in their teens. And so my health's been important to me.
Right, sure,
brother and sister, can't get up and walk around. And so that's always been. So I've been healthy for this. So this kind of hit me in the mouth. But at the end of the day, I've been blessed so much in my life, so many reasons, so many ways, so many people. And, we're going to battle through it. And that's what you do if you got cancer. When you're on the team,
mm-hmm.
Many, many people come up to me and talk to me, as I do other people, and I find out they have cancer, because you're on the same team. And we're all together. We're fighting, battling. And by the way, they do tremendous things for cancer now. And
oh, yeah.
Each year it gets better and better in terms of attacking
it. It's a whole new
ball
game, no pun intended, from 20 years ago.
No question. They're doing remarkable things.
We're visiting with Gary Pinkel, former Mizzou coach. Gary Pinkel, the author of The 100-Yard Journey. You want to get a book signed? He's going to do it tomorrow evening. Stonecrest Books in Osage Beach from 5:30 to 7. So you're not coaching anymore. What do you do every day now when you get up? What, besides doing interviews for the book?
I never had a plan. And I never said, I had just signed a 6-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little bit of an adjustment. I'm sitting there December 1st, 2 years ago. And all of a sudden I wake up in the morning. I don't have an office. I don't have where to go. And so that was, that was an adjustment for me. And certainly probably was for my whole family and certainly Missy. But, you learn things. I had to get a desk. I went to a desk. I had my desk where things were. Well, I had a desk in my house, but it was just looked good.
Yep.
I didn't use it at all. But I have things in order that my things have got to be here, this placed here, and so on and so forth. So I had to go out and get all that done. So that was most importantly. And then you talk to several of my friends, and they say, well, don't wake up unless you have a plan what you're going to do the next day. Don't just, just be aimlessly, Tom, we'll see tomorrow morning what I'm going to do.
I'd be in trouble.
And so there was a lot of things. So there was a lot of things like that, people that gave me advice. One said that you're not going to, real good advice for a former football coach, that said, if you think you're going to start sleeping well all of a sudden, you're not.
Really?
So don't let it bother you. And it's taken about a year and a half for my body to adjust to not all the being on call, 24 hours a
day.
Meeting
or whatever.
Well, I was on call always. I mean, kids call me, 5 o'clock in the morning. So, mm-hmm. And I solved a lot of things, problems at 3 o'clock in the morning, football-wise, and a lot of things, because honestly, it's just amazing how that worked out. But at the end of the day, it took me about a year and a half to really chill out and sleep like a normal person.
I suspect you've probably been asked this 100 times, Gary. Would you coach again?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh.
Would you really?
I feel so lucky. Oh, no, not now.
Oh, that's
no.
what I'm saying.
No, if I, I thought, no, I got
news,
you. I got
Gary
you.
Pinkle says, no, yes, no, I will no. coach again.
No, I thought just in the profession of being a coach.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like I was the luckiest guy in the world. I got paid for doing something I love to do.
Yeah.
But no, I will not get. I will not coach again. No, I was a head coach for 25 years, 15 here and 10 at Toledo. The average in Power 5 is right now about 6.3. You know,
is
this
really?
Year,
okay.
6 of the 12 coaches got fired this year.
So you
six
were
six of the 14 got fired this year.
You were an anomaly.
Yeah, that doesn't happen. Yeah, I always tell people this. I've never been to a coach's retirement party in my life, except my own. That's the truth.
And you planned it.
I never have.
Yeah,
because coaches generally get fired.
Has anyone from the NFL ever been in touch with you?
A couple years ago, I got a contact on that, and I just kind of put that out. Mostly it was like interviews that people. My name had popped up, and someone else I had connection I had. And I said, no, I really had no desire ever to go in the NFL.
Really? And I've always wondered this too, Gary, tell me the difference briefly, if you can, the difference between the college game and the NFL game. Like what is, from a coach's perspective?
Well, first of all, in the NFL, it's a job and you have got to, if you don't work hard, they'll replace you like this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty simple there in terms of that. You know, you don't really have to motivate players.
Yeah.
Although the good ones do motivate, but if you have to motivate people, they shouldn't be on your 45 man roster.
Right.
For us, you're building developing men. You have a plan in place to develop leadership, to develop teamwork, to develop a culture within your program that every year you start over and you lose players and you develop young men they have to be life lessons that you teach them in our program. And we did those things. We had graduation rate, it was very high, but we also taught kids how to go out on dates with ladies and be respectful of people,
right,
and so on and so forth, all those things. So there's a lot of things involved in getting that done, and those things you do, you know, with college kids. You know, I get it when they're 18 and let them go when they're 22, 23.
If somebody approached you about doing some TV commentary, whatnot, would you be interested?
Yeah, I got involved in that a little bit right afterwards.
I saw on the SEC.
Yeah, SEC Network and
on a regular basis.
Yeah,
though,
I would probably do radio. The thing I did when they asked me about the SEC Network, and this was in April. We were on the phone. They asked what I want to do, and they said, "Well, you're going to be leaving on every game's an away game,
mm-hmm,
when you're doing a TV game.
Right.
Everyone's away game. There's no home games.
Right,
okay,
right.
And so you're going to be leaving Thursday morning or Friday morning, coming home Sunday afternoon. And I looked at that, and I was flying back in a plane, you know, and I from Charlotte, and I'm going.
That's almost.
I might as well be coaching
right,
if I'm doing this.
Exactly.
I'm going to be gone 4 days a week. And I enjoyed it, but it was, but I would like, I really like radio. I mean, yeah. I would do more radio just in terms. Well, I do.
I'm biased,
but so
do
I. 6 to 6:10 in Kansas City.
Right, right.
I go on for 15 minutes with them every during the season, every Tuesday in the last 2 years, and I've really enjoyed doing that. And I do a lot of other radio things, and it's fun. But it's you know, it's a job.
Yeah,
it's a job. It's certainly not easy to do, but you know, it's been fun.
Do you ever, as a former coach now, do you ever watch a game and you just start going crazy? You know, it's like, can you watch a game like a normal person now? As an average fan?
Yeah, no, right? I watch it as a coach
second
always.
Second-guess the coach?
No, I not second-guess in terms of maybe situational, you know, down a distance field position, time of game. Strengths, weaknesses,
clock,
those kind of things. I
say,
yeah, all that kind of, I love that stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like to tell people, if people ask me about, do I miss the players, and I miss game day.
Mm-hmm.
I miss putting my headset on,
right,
and then winding the clock. And I went in a zone for 4 hours.
And it's more than just the routine, right?
No,
it's the joy of it.
Well, you're gone. It was awesome because
mm-hmm,
we were so well prepared that I learned from Don James. And we rarely ever did we make any mistakes in games. And the reason is because we were so well prepared. But it was fun making decisions. And it was fun managing the game. And I used to tell my players, I'm not a cheerleader on the sideline jumping up and down.
Right.
But when they're in the locker room, I'll do that and everything else. I'm out there, especially when things are not going well, you look over me, everything's okay.
Right, right.
We're okay. And I'm not listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire with this headset on, okay? I'm not. I'm focused on what to do. So you score a touchdown, I'm getting the 2-point the kicker in to kick the PAT.
Right.
I'm also getting on the phone talking to the who's responsible for the defensive kickoff. Are we going to kick squib? We're going to kick bloop? We're going to hit down the. We're going against the wind. You know, they're returners, and then that's what I did though constantly, and it was fun.
There are coaches who are obviously known for their, you know, histrionics on the sidelines,
yeah,
and then there are guys like you who are these staid, stoic, square-jawed guys, and you know, you're not wearing your emotions on your sleeve.
And my players understood that, you know, I think, because I got criticized when, you know, when you get, you know, we struggled so much when we first got here.
Don't
anyway.
Have an emotion.
That kind of thing. Which is anybody knows me, it's not true. But the point is, was I always told my players and really explained to them, and we always did this in August in between our camp practices, and I would explain to them what I do and why I do it. Mm-hmm. And I said, things are, all kinds of stuff can be happening, but you can glance over at me, and I'm going to make sure everybody's making the right decisions, doing the right thing. And then I'll be hugging and kissing you after the game's over, and that's really what happened.
You and I arrived in Missouri close to the same time. Mm-hmm. You came here in 2001. I arrived in 2002. Did you know anything about Missouri before you got here?
Not the state. Not a whole lot. I mean, I knew of the Lake of the Ozarks because people did a vacation there once or twice, so I did know that. It was also very disturbing in our world of coaching. Was that you got the state of Missouri with Kansas City, St. Louis, two major cities in the country. Right. And, you know, like, for example, we inherited a program that had two winning seasons in 17 years.
Right.
And nobody could ever understand why. That's why I thought of it. You know, St. Louis is, I've been in St. Louis before Kansas City. Great. I had never been in Columbia. Other than that, no, I just knew that it had potential. And when I took the job, people told me that was crazy.
It almost mirrors my experience because they said to me, hey, we want to send you to, at the time, Columbia, Missouri. And I was like, I've never heard of Columbia, Missouri in my life. I know there's a St. Louis and I know there's a Kansas City. I said, I think there's a Springfield too.
Where in the heck's Columbia?
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, before you got here, as you alluded, Missouri was not exactly synonymous with winning. What
understatement?
Yeah. What magic touch did you have? What did you do?
First of all, I think I've always surrounded myself with good people. We had the same staff for probably 7 or 8 years before anybody left, mm-hmm. Most of which I brought from Toledo with me. We had to put a program in. One I believe I talk about in the book about mm-hmm. the Don James program. I played for this program, this is what I went on a St. Louis home there the first year I got here. And one thing you find out when you inherit a program that the culture is so difficult, one thing you find out is you inherit all the other stuff. So I had schools that didn't let me come in their school. The coach doesn't want to see you.
Really?
They've had problems with Missouri coaches. I'm not nobody in particular, but that was just the attitude. It was not very good. But we had to sell something different. So what I did is I'd go into home and say, okay, listen, I played for Don James at Kent State University, a guy named Nick Saban.
Everybody knows Nick.
Jack Lambert's and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I explained the dads knew, but sometimes the kids didn't. I said, he right after the May 4th shootings, and everybody knows about that, 1970, Don James comes in there. We won the first championship in the history of the school. He took that program to the University of Washington. Okay, and at University of Washington, which I worked for him there part time, but he won championships, and later on he was going to win a national championship, and then I picked that thing up to work at Kent State, worked at Washington, and I dropped it into Toledo, Ohio, and we win championships there, and I picked that same program at all these three places and dropped it in Columbia, Missouri. So I'm looking at the parents saying, I know a lot of people have come here before. You've heard it. Oh yeah, we're going to start winning. Well, I'm just giving you a blueprint here.
It's this pedigree winning.
Yeah,
that's
what I explained to the parents looking at them. I'm not making this up here. You know what I'm saying? I'm just not making this sound good.
Right.
It worked here, and it's gonna work here.
You had a formula, and it took a year or two?
When Dave Matter sat down with me, okay, now you're the head football coach at the University of Missouri. He came in with the first 4 years, mm-hmm. all the calendars, losing, winning, mm-hmm. losing. The first 4 years.
How about that?
It was so much more difficult, but we didn't have any. We know there's no shortcuts. We knew what we were doing. We stuck with the plan. Even when a lot of people said, you got to change this and change that, you know, we didn't do that. But then the next 11 years, we went to 9 bowls.
Oh, yeah.
Won 5 divisional championships, went to 4 championship games. 2 of those games of which, if I'd have coached better, we'd have won. We'd play the national championship.
Right.
And so we were a top 15, top 20 football program for that 11-year period of time.
You know, when Mizzou moved to the SEC, what year was that?
That was 2012.
12, okay. I know some of the talk was, all right, well, Missouri, you're now in the SEC. This isn't Big 12 anymore. Now you're playing with the big boys, with the inference being that we're not up to these guys.
Yes.
What was your response to that?
Well, I first of all, you have to, you know, winning takes care of all those things right there. I just, you know, we just focused on what I did. First year, we struggled a little bit, had some injuries.
Then have concerns then about SEC?
No. I just knew it was going to be tougher to play in the league because there's so many good teams.
Sure.
A lot of good things in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just, it's a league's heart. Six coaches got fired this year out of 14.
Yeah, high expectations.
Because you have so many good teams beating each other.
Right.
And so that was something that, you know, but I had a lot of confidence what our program is and what we did, and you know, we were certainly had a lot of great accomplishments, and but it's a great league. And interestingly enough, a guy sent me a text today and said they, in the last 5 years of in conference games, and that's 8 games a year that you play in conference, University of Missouri was 6 out of 14 in winning percentage. By the way, you can't, and that was the last 5 years, okay?
Right.
That was 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17. And guess what? That's I guess we can.
Nothing.
I guess we can compete.
Yeah. Who's the purest talent player you ever coach? If you had to pick one guy, just in terms of pure talent, raw, God given, what would you say? Who would you say it was?
Oh gosh.
I know.
Unfortunately, we had about 10 first round draft picks, but Alden Smith is probably one. You know, Alden Smith is a first-round draft pick with San Francisco 49ers.
Wow, yeah.
Rand has had some issues, you know, some personal issues. Mm-hmm. Never had a problem with him ever when he played for me, ever, in any ways. But he certainly was, you know, remarkably talented. Jeremy Maclin was, remarkably talented. Yeah. You know, there's a bunch of other. I could just go on and on and on. But, you know, it's fun to try to get players to reach their potential. That's the most important thing.
I'm going to throw some guys' names out here.
Okay.
And just guys that you've coached.
Okay.
Just give me your response off the top of your head, first thing you think of. Brad Smith.
Brad Smith, one of the greatest athletes I've ever been around.
And one of the nicest guys.
Yeah, the nicest people I've ever been around. Played 8 years in the NFL. And he's a guy that, you know, we needed a catalyst here. I used to say my prayers, my first. Remember losing. I mentioned it before.
Here comes Brad.
So then we got here comes Brad Smith.
Right out of
Youngstown, Ohio.
Out of Youngstown. Yeah, that's right.
And he, Brad Smith. You know, I'm saying my prayers to God. I'm helping these kids, but if I don't start winning games, I'm not going to be here to help them. When I need, and so, and you know, Brad Smith came in here, and it really changed Mizzou football. At least got us rolling.
Marcus Golden.
Marcus Golden is one of the great kids I've ever been around. Great competitor. Came in from junior college, walked to my office and said, Coach, I will do anything you want me to do. As a person, as a student, and as a football player. Anything you want me to do, I'm going to do.
Wow.
You know, guy's degree, second round draft pick, you know, great, great football player.
One of my favorites, Chase Daniel.
Chase is one of the, you know, I coached a lot of quarterbacks. I watch myself here. I played, coached five guys, played in the NFL.
He's not playing favorites, guys.
My God. I all these quarterbacks. Washington that I coached, I had Toledo here. That's why we also won a lot, because we had good quarterbacks. Just a great, great football player. Not very many head football coaches. I know Don James, who, you know, won national championship, who I played for and worked for at Washington. There's not too many guys that sit in New York City with their football player that's nominated for the Heisman Trophy. And I sat in that place you see on TV. It's been there for 50 years.
Yeah.
And it's surreal. And that's because he was such a great, great player, offensive player of the year in 2007 in the Big 12. And just a phenomenal, phenomenal player, one of the best I've ever been around. And also probably one of the best leaders I've ever been around also.
A couple more. Jeremy Maclin.
Great athlete, great kid. He was committed to Oklahoma. He changed his commitment, came with us, and I love the guy. And after I had my lymphoma, remember, that was released by somebody at the university, which is a different issue, on a Friday before we play them. They happened to be in town, or they were leaving. I don't know. All of a sudden, I get a call. We're in Kansas City for Friday, and we're going to play Saturday morning. I'm in my hotel room, and I get a call and say, there's somebody down the lobby who needs to see you. And I said, who is it? And Hill told me, I just think you got to see who it is. And I came down, and this is 4 hours after it came out that I had lymphoma. And there's Jeremy Maclin standing there.
Wow.
He's got a game the next day, and he wraps his arms around me, told me he loved me. And I mean, it's just hard to even explain to anybody. But Jeremy Macklin's a phenomenal, you know, he got married this year.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great person, a great man. Like all these guys are, talking about, and obviously tremendously successful.
One last name, Spoon.
Sean Witherspoon. Everybody loves Spoon. I love the guy.
Is he one of the most likable guys ever in Mizzou football?
He was a great team player. Always positive. great. I mentioned just being redundant, but his leadership was really outstanding. And also, his leadership was even the best when things weren't going well. And that's really when leadership shows up. Right. When things are going well,
sure,
leadership's
easy.
Important.
Yeah.
Right. You know, because you can get a big head and everything else. But when things are hitting the fan, that locker room's got to be done the right way. You got the right kids walking around the locker room to get it done. That's what Spoon did.
We're visiting with the one and only Gary Pinkel, former Mizzou coach. He's the author of The 100-Yard Journey. Book signing going on tomorrow at Stonecrest Books in Osage Beach from 5:30 to 7. You want to be there. I would say get there early, by the way. Line, there's probably going to be a line, okay? So how exciting have these book signings been, by the way?
They've been really good. The fans have been unbelievable to me. Yeah. They've been really, really nice. And so what I've done a couple of them is if there's a bunch of people when I get there, which I have been, stand in line, I kind of get up and I talk to them a little bit about the process for about 10 minutes of the book and kind of show them a little bit and get some interaction going a little bit. And that's been really good too.
Let's talk about the events of the 2015 season when your players threatened to go on strike if the Mizzou president wasn't fired. Some people thought that you should have taken maybe a more authoritarian stance on that situation. What was your take on the whole thing?
Well, first of all, I explained it in my book, and I think that's kind of calmed people a little bit because I kind of explained what we did. First of all, is that thing was thrown in my face that Saturday night at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Like, I was aware there was things on campus, but I had no idea anything else was going on. And basically, what I had some players that they wanted to help this kid, and they wanted to save this kid's life, and that it wasn't about agenda. There was
the hunger
Twitter.
Strike going
it was
on.
A, but, was, there right. was a Twitter going out that we sent out accidentally. It was about agenda, and that was a mistake. And I
now,
made that very clear. Somebody who calls my, has done a remarkable job, made a mistake.
Okay.
So that added.
Something that should not have been released.
Yeah, should never have been released. And we came out the next day and explained that it wasn't. It was completely wrong. Because the whole thing was when this guy eats, it's over. And, coach, we want to do it now. Because we want to get practice Monday. Let's get this going. We don't care. We hope they meet with him, get it all settled. He start eating, and we're going to go. That's what it was about. It wasn't about firing a guy or anything else. It was about the guy eating. And they're in their tears talking to me on the phone. So that's happened. So when things like this happen, I talk about procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's about how quick it happened for me. So I talked about, and these were good kids too. Most of my kids are good kids. These are really good kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talk about procedure. What have I done my whole life as a head football coach? Okay. Gary Pinkel just doesn't make decisions. I'm doing this and this that would have effects of anything of magnitude, anything would be on TV, anything I'd be on ESPN in any way like that. I just don't make decisions and do those things. What I do is I call my athletic director. And the athletic director generally calls the chancellor and the president, and they talk. And then what do you want to do, Gary? How do you want to handle this? And then generally 95% of the time, they would sit there and say, we agree, roll, go with it. But you communicate. And this was no different. This is no different. So I called our athletic director, and one of the first things that he said is, we got to support those kids. We have to support those kids.
Now, Mike Alden was?
No, Mike Alden wasn't. Mike Alden, I called Mike. Actually, it was in Chicago.
Right.
It was Mac Rhodes.
Okay.
And we had to protect the kids. And Mike Alden said the same thing to me.
Right.
He was in Chicago.
Right.
The first thing he said to me is, got to protect the kids.
Did you feel like you were taking sides, though, on this? Okay, Pinkel's siding with his player.
No.
Yeah, duh.
I don't think it's siding. I think it was for those guys just wanted the kid to eat. That's all they cared about. Okay, that was all it was about. But at the end of the day, what I'm trying to explain is I don't make those decisions.
Right.
I say in the book, if Mac Rhodes was said to me and said, there's no way in the world we can support them, I would like to think I said I would anyway.
Right.
Although
Although
I've never, ever went against that, the few times it's ever happened where it was, that kind of situation. But it never, and I say right in the book, it never got that far.
Right.
It never got that far. And, but I think the thing that understands a little bit about the whole thing is there's a procedure you follow. A lot of people think Gary Pinkel just does what he wants to do around here. And that's not true at all. And I think people understand that a little bit. The other thing, too, is things like this bring the best out of people, and it brings the absolutely worst out of people, too.
True.
And, you know, it works. It's both sides. And a lot of people said to me, gosh, what a remarkable career. It's too bad that had to happen to you. And I said, you know what? That's life's not like that. Life's not just, well, let's have all these good things happen. Let's kind of deal with it the way we can. Life's not like that. You know, you got to, you got to deal with, you know, you make the bad situations, turn them into good situations. Right. You got to solve problems. And you got to, and when you have adversities, you got to respond. And that's what a lot of the book is about is, and I was trying to be very, very honest. I got a DWI. Several years ago, and you know, over drinking, everybody knows me. It doesn't happen, but anyway, I did, and I owned it.
I talk
in the book about the whole thing too. But I wanted every aspect of the book to be very, very honest and real, and that was real important to me. And just as we approached this, we were very honest about this too.
From where you are now, and obviously not being associated with the university, and you can kind of look in from the outside. A lot of people saw this, and I think there are still repercussions as a real black eye on the University of Missouri. Do you see those wounds healing now?
Oh yeah, and there's no question about it.
Yeah,
and you know, us winning again, basketball sports better. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's part of it. You know, there's no question about that. No, I don't think there's any question about it. I think the leadership is absolutely outstanding. And our Chancellor Cartwright is very, very impressive. President Choi, I mean, I'm very impressed. And also talking to people that I know within the university systems that come to me and say, hey, guess what? We got some really good leadership. And so I think we're on the way back. I think there's so many great positive things out there. And the truth of the matter is this, is I try to get the university to do a couple of things. But one thing that I wanted to do right after that happened in November, That next June, okay, or the next year when we came back, we had the second best retention rate. So the kids that were on campus when that incident happened, which really much didn't really happen on campus, though, basically. A lot of it was blown out of proportion.
Hardly you had that one.
Hardly really anything of
with the bullhorns and all
that.
That kind of thing.
But what happened was that next year, we had the second best retention rate in the history of the University of Missouri. So all those kids that went to school there, it was the second best retention rate. Now, the university didn't do anything with it. They could have. Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? What a story that says.
Right.
What a story that says.
Yeah.
But anyway, they decided not to use anything with it. But anyway, they're battling back, and it was unfortunate the whole thing happened. But you know, life like that presents itself, and you do what you feel is the right thing to do. And at the end of the day, I've always, my whole life, I always ask myself, what's the right thing to do?
Yeah.
I am suspended players many times at other schools, would have never suspended them, but I did it because of the principle of the other thing. It was the right thing to do, and I probably lost some games because of it. But at the end of the day, you know, the right thing to do is the best way to live.
I've heard some players refer to their coaches, and you included, as sort of a father figure. A lot of the players you've coached over the years came from less than ideal families, background situations, and everything. How do you take a young man of 18 or 19 and mold him into not just a great athlete, but a responsible person and citizen? Yeah. How do you do that? You don't know.
I think you give him discipline, you give him structure, you give him love. You got to prove to them that you can, that they can trust you. So everything you say, everything you do, you got to show up, and it's got to be real. Okay. So I think those are the first things that you do.
So they see the phonies.
No question about it. You know, so, or they really see the sincere caring. It's significant. I talk to my staff about it all the time. I tell my staff is, don't expect that I'm with them to passionately care about Mizzou football.
Right.
But don't expect them to passionately care about Mizzou football if they don't feel like we passionately care about them. Okay. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a responsibility that we all have. And I think, you know, those are really the responsibilities that you have, is to help develop young men and do the right things to guide them and direct them. And at the end of the day, what was real important for me also to do is, when you go out and get everybody's, you visit a lot of homes recruiting, you get
percentage, to know the families.
But you get percentages that you don't get that you're in the homes. Some you do get. But at the end of the day, I want every player that played for me, I want to be in their home, because I could be in their home and I could really see the lifestyle of how they grew up. And some were incredible stories. I mean, incredible stories. And also it allowed me to deal with these players as we helped them mature into young men and grow. And that was very, very, very helpful that we did that.
When you talk about visiting homes, I'm sure you saw the movie The Blind Side. And all I can think of is the scene with Nick Saban, Lou Holtz, all those coaches, one by one, knocking on their door.
Yeah.
You've done that.
Yeah, been there, done that. Yeah. Man. But the real factor is you're selling the university, you're selling it, you know, you want them to get to commit to you. That's true. But on the other hand, it was always check off. I know this guy had an environment. He didn't have a dad. He had an aunt that was the anchor in that house. Mm-hmm. It was the mom here. It was maybe the uncle here or somebody. Or it was a mom and dad sometimes, depending on what it was. And now you understand some of the behaviors that some of your kids are doing. They're 18 years old. You get them as freshmen.
Yeah.
You see some of their behaviors. Well, you think about, well, guess what? I know why this is happening. So we can help him through all those things. But giving him discipline, giving him love, giving him direction, making him accountable and responsible, also understanding that, you know, if you don't learn how to work hard, you're not going to be good at anything. Mm-hmm. So develop work habits. It's really like what you do with your kids, but you do in a four-year period of time. But there's a specific plan for this as we're doing this. We don't wake up one day, okay, let's talk about honesty, or let's talk about values, or let's talk about making sure this week everybody's got to be on time. If you were 5 seconds late for anything in our program, you would do what we call awareness training. We would make you aware of why you should be responsible.
Right.
Okay? And so those things will carry over to those kids, you know, for the rest of their lives. And I could show you texts and emails I get from players now that just said that, you know, more so about how it's affected their life, how it's affecting being a father or working or that kind of thing.
So it was a plan in the same way as earlier you described taking a winning tradition from one program to another and just bring in same thing.
That's a program. It's all part of the program. We had a plan for absolutely everything in our football program. And that was in the player development, them strength, speed, quickness, their development as young men, which mm-hmm. I'm talking about right now. This is the process, things we did here to get that done. And so there was a plan and it's what we did and what we do, and it would work anywhere in the country.
If you didn't go into a sports career, what would you have done? What do you think?
I think I probably would want to be a pilot.
In airplane?
Yeah.
Like a pilot. commercial pilot or something?
Yeah, just kind of the control, maybe control issues with me I have. I'm being honest here, so let's be honest. I mean,
you're Captain Gary Pinkle.
That's exactly right.
We'll be arriving in Denver in 15 minutes.
Then they say it's only half full, half of them got off. But I always thought that would be neat, that, you know, just to be able to do that. And really, I'd never done any training for it. I have several friends that, you know, have jets and planes, so I get a chance to sit in cockpits a little bit with those guys a little bit. But that and I probably would have probably gotten school administration. But I had a really good grade. My book tells about a guy named mm-hmm. Dick Fortner and Don James.
Yes.
I had an awesome father also. But I had these guys that had a huge influence on me. And I was went to college, and I'm thinking, these guys are, I'm just watching their coaches. These guys, they get paid to coach football.
Right.
And I love football. I said, are you kidding me? You know, now it's a tough job. You know, people get fired. It's not, you know, it's a crazy job in many ways. But
my favorite, I want to tell you, Gary, the book is The 100-Yard Journey, by the way. Gary Pinkle, former Mizzou coach. My favorite part of the book is honestly your telling of the interactions between your parents and you and the things that they instilled in you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's obvious those things stuck. They stayed with you. And in a sense, you paid it forward with these other young players.
Yeah, my family and my mom and dad, my mom probably more so than my dad, but both, it was all about virtues and being respectful to people and being mm-hmm. kind to people and being responsible. And you know, all these virtues of, you know, you are who you hang around with. You know, if you don't have anything nice to say, keep your mouth shut. You know, mm-hmm. the golden rule, treat as you want to treat. I go on and on and on. But these things came all the time.
Right.
My mom, they become bouncing off the walls. Chase Daniel grew up with that. His mom and dad put the stuff hanging in his bedroom. His bedroom was like Mr. Positive bedroom of the of the world. And also the bathroom that he had in. But that's all he did his whole life was look at positive things. Look at Chase
it
Daniel,
paid off.
Most positive guy you've ever been around. So,
amazing.
You know, but my family had a huge, and I try to do the same things to my players. I try to teach them virtues, teach about being honest and respectful and caring and so on and so forth, and things that I would do to help make them better young men.
Well, if you want to meet Gary Pinkle and say thanks for all the thrills, all the years at Missouri, and pick up a book, get it signed, he's happy to do that tomorrow evening at Stonecrest Books in Osage Beach, 5:30 till 7. Gary, I got to tell you, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on my show. And I mean, it's just, this is a real thrill for me.
Well, thank you. And thanks to all the fans out there. Looking forward to seeing a lot of people. God bless and Merry Christmas.
Gary Pinkle.
You'll find the Kevin Hilly Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Audio Boom, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Subscribe, share, comment, and like. You can email Kevin, too, at kevinhilly@gmail.com. And, of course, he's on the air each day from 6 to 10 a.m. Central Time on 101.9 The Wave. Thanks for listening to the Kevin Hilly Podcast.